Yes. I wanted you to see how the comfort of all depends on each doing her share faithfully. While Hannah and I did your work, you got on pretty well, though I don't think you were very happy or amiable. So I thought, as a little lesson, I would show you what happens when everyone thinks only of herself. Don't you feel that it is pleasanter to help one another, to have daily duties which make leisure sweet when it comes, and to bear and forbear, that home may be comfortable and lovely to us all? We do, Mother, we do, cried the girls. Then let me advise you to take up your little burdens again, for though they seem heavy sometimes, they are good for us, and lighten as we learn to carry them. Work is wholesome, and there is plenty for everyone. It keeps us from ennui and mischief, and is good for health and spirits, and gives us a sense of power and independence better than money or fashion. We'll work like bees, and love it too, see if we don't, said Joe. I'll learn plain cooking for my holiday task, and the next dinner party I have shall be a success. I'll make the set of shirts for Father, instead of letting you do it, Marmee. I can, and I will, though I'm not fond of sewing. That will be better than fussing over my own things, which are plenty nice enough as they are, said Meg. I'll do my lessons every day, and not spend so much time with my music and dolls. I am a stupid thing, and ought to be studying, not playing, was Beth's resolution, while Amy followed their example by heroically declaring, I shall learn to make buttonholes, and attend to my parts of speech. Very good. Then I am quite satisfied with the experiment, and fancy that we shall not have to repeat it. Only don't go to the other extreme and delve like slaves. Have regular hours for work and play. Make each day both useful and pleasant, and prove that you understand the worth of time by employing it well. Then youth will be delightful, old age will bring few regrets, and life become a beautiful success, in spite of poverty. We'll remember, Mother. And they did. Chapter 12. Camp Lawrence. Beth was postmistress, for being most at home she could attend to it regularly, and dearly liked the daily task of unlocking the little door and distributing the mail. One July day she came in with her hands full, and went about the house leaving letters and parcels like the penny post. "Here's your posy, Mother." "Laurie never forgets that," she said, putting the fresh nosegay in the vase that stood in Marmee's corner and was kept supplied by the affectionate boy. "Miss Meg March, one letter and a glove," continued Beth, delivering the articles to her sister, who sat near her mother, stitching wristbands. "Why, I left a pair over there, and here is only one," said Meg, looking at the grey cotton glove. "Didn't you drop the other in the garden?" "No, I'm sure I didn't, for there was only one in the office." "I hate to have odd gloves. Never mind, the other may be found. My letter is only a translation of the German song I wanted. I think Mr. Brooke did it, for this isn't Laurie's writing." Mrs. March glanced at Meg, who was looking very pretty in her gingham morning gown, with the little curls blowing about her forehead, and very womanly as she sat sewing at her little work-table full of tidy white rolls, so unconscious of the thought in her mother's mind as she sewed and sang, while her fingers flew and her thoughts were busied with girlish fancies as innocent and fresh as the pansies in her belt, that Mrs. March smiled and was satisfied. "Two letters for Dr. Joe, a book and a funny old hat," which covered the whole post office stuck outside, said Beth, laughing as she went into the study where Joe sat writing. "What a sly fellow Laurie is! I said I wished bigger hats were the fashion because I burn my face every hot day. He said, why mind the fashion? Wear a big hat and be comfortable. I said I would if I had one, and he has sent me this to try me. I'll wear it for fun and show him I don't care for the fashion." And hanging the antique broad brim on the bust of Plato, Joe read her letters. One from her mother made her cheeks glow and her eyes fill, for it said to her, "My dear, I write a little word to tell you with how much satisfaction I watch your efforts to control your temper. You say nothing about your trials, failures, or successes, and think perhaps that no one sees them but the friend whose help you daily ask, if I may trust the well-worn cover of your guidebook. I, too, have seen them all, and heartily believe in the sincerity of your resolution, since it begins to bear fruit. Go on, dear, patiently and bravely, and always believe that no one sympathizes more tenderly with you than your loving mother." That does me good. That's worth millions of money and pecks of praise. Oh, Marmy, I do try. I will keep on trying, and not get tired, since I have you to help me. Laying her head on her arms, Jo wet her little romance with a few happy tears, for she had thought that no one saw and appreciated her efforts to be good, and this assurance was doubly precious, doubly encouraging, because unexpected and from the person whose commendation she most valued. Feeling stronger than ever to meet and subdue her Apollyon, she pinned the note inside her frock as a shield and a reminder, lest she be taken unaware, and proceeded to open her other letter, quite ready for either good or bad news. In a big, dashing hand, Laurie wrote, "Dear Jo, what ho! Some English girls and boys are coming to see me tomorrow, and I want to have a jolly time. If it's fine, I'm going to pitch my tent in Long Meadow, and row up the whole crew to lunch and croquet. Have a fire, make messes, gypsy fashion, and all sorts of larks. They are nice people and like such things. Brooke will go, to keep us boys steady, and Kate Vaughan will play propriety for the girls. I want you all to come. Can't let Beth off at any price, and nobody shall worry her. Don't bother about rations. I'll see to that and everything else. Only do come. There's a good fellow. In a tearing hurry, yours ever, Laurie." "Here's richness," cried Jo, flying in to tell the news to Meg. "Of course we can go, Mother. It will be such a help to Laurie, for I can row, and Meg see to the lunch, and the children be useful in some way. I hope the Vaughans are not fine, grown-up people. Do you know anything about them, Jo?" asked Meg. "Only that there are four of them. Kate is older than you, Fred and Frank, twins, about my age, and a little girl, Grace, who is 9 or 10. Laurie knew them abroad, and liked the boys. I fancied from the way he primmed up his mouth in speaking of her that he didn't admire Kate much. I'm so glad my French print is clean. It's just the thing and so becoming," observed Meg complacently. "Have you anything decent, Jo?"
"Scarlet and grey boating suit, good enough for me. I shall row and tramp about, so I don't want any starch to think of."
"You'll come, Betty, if you won't let any of the boys talk to me."
"Not a boy."
"I like to please Laurie, and I'm not afraid of Mr. Brooke. He is so kind. But I don't want to play or sing or say anything. I'll work hard and not trouble anyone, and you'll take care of me, Jo, so I'll go."
"That's my good girl. You do try to fight off your shyness, and I love you for it. Fighting faults isn't easy, as I know, and a cheery word kind of gives a lift.
Thank you, Mother." And Jo gave the thin cheek a grateful kiss, more precious to Mrs. March than if it had given back the rosy roundness of her youth.
"I had a box of chocolate drops and the picture I wanted to copy," said Amy, showing her mail.
"And I got a note from Mr. Lawrence asking me to come over and play to him tonight, before the lamps are lighted, and I shall go," added Beth, whose friendship with the old gentleman prospered finely.
"Now let's fly round and do double duty today, so that we can play tomorrow with free minds," said Jo, preparing to replace her pen with a broom.
When the sun peeped into the girls' room early next morning to promise them a fine day, he saw a comical sight. Each had made such preparation for the fete as seemed necessary and proper. Meg had an extra row of little curl papers across her forehead. Jo had copiously anointed her afflicted face with cold cream. Beth had taken Joanna to bed with her to atone for the approaching separation, and Amy had capped the climax by putting a clothespin on her nose to uplift the offending feature.
It was one of the kind artists used to hold the paper on their drawing boards, therefore quite appropriate and effective for the purpose to which it was now put.